Well, Beethoven, as we all like to think of him, was an incorrigible kind of character who, most famously, in his later years, did not dress properly or behave well in public, or at best behaved unpredictably in public. And as a young man, making a career for himself in Vienna, he was very much concerned with impressing his public with his skill, and for that reason, he waited a considerable amount of time before producing his first six string quartets. Even in these quartets, we see flashes of the later Beethoven personality, the unpredictable side of him, the experimental side, and the side of him that just outwardly challenged convention in music. But in the quartet that we've decided to talk about at the moment, the 18 number two in G major, we experience Beethoven on his absolutely best musical behavior. In this first movement, he seems to be practically bent over backwards to conform to the expectations of an aristocratic listening public.
In terms of the opus 59 number three, you've got the third movement, which in a way sounds very classical. In a sense, he's kind of gone back to a very
minuet.
Classic minuet trio style. And the trio was pretty heavy-handed for Beethoven. I mean, it's boisterous and it's energetic. But what I love so much about 59 number three, the last movement, of course, might be the all-time quartet virtuosic, the most like Paganini caprice that you could have for a string quartet. And he was experimenting with the metronome at that point. And boy, he put a lot of fast tempos on these things. And the tempo that he puts, which can really only be done on recordings, is unbelievable. Beethoven was commissioned to write three quartets, and this was now, what, 15 years past the middle period, and it's incredible. I think he had so much music in him at that point that it expanded into five quartets. And there's what he got to at this point is really beyond the writing of that time. I mean, he really took it into the 20th century, meaning that in a certain way, he got beyond bar lines and key signatures and the forms and wrote exactly what he wanted to, whether it fit into any specific form or not. He would just expand and do what he had total mastery at this point. And it was totally internalized. I mean, he couldn't hear anything. But the first movement of Opus 131 may be one of the most beautiful movements, one of the most beautiful spiritual movements.
Well, if these are the last pieces he wrote, too, the string quartet, these late quartets. And Wagner said that this movement, that it was the saddest music ever written. And I think it's a good example of this last period in his life, where he really enters a kind of mysticism and an emotional quality that, as Larry says, sort of goes beyond what we know on this earth.
It is interesting thinking about that quote from Wagner, because clearly if you put it in the context of music of the 20th century, Bartok, Shostakovich, there's a lot sadder music that has been written than Opus 131. I think it's important to distinguish between sadness and bleakness and desolation. And there is nothing really bleak or desolate about this first movement. It goes very deep spiritually. It is sad, and it's an unusual key, C-sharp minor. It's a key that's not meant to make us feel comfortable, but its message is not hopeless.
So between the middle of the 18th century and the turn of the century into the 1800s, you have all of these quartets of Haydn and Mozart and Beethoven. But who knows, if Haydn hadn't had that job at Esterházy, the quartet might not have evolved the way that it has.